this poison food that you have left for us. So by the time I'm talking about health, you need to understand what rules have we implemented in governance? What kind of agricultural process have we put in place? What education have we put together? Who is making business out of our sickness and disease? Who is cashing in on my stomach and on my hunger? Ultimately, when you come to health, it's a result of a couple of principles that either will have been maintained or they've been destroyed. And health on its own is not hospital health. Health was daily living in the ancient times. Health was daily living. My grandmother, at the change of every season, she would find the aloe tree. Pick up that aloe tree, put it in a glass of water, the water becomes white, that aloe. Then all of us would be made to drink that aloe. The small little reward of ground nuts, because that aloe was a hack and very bitter. So she would give us to it. Drink a glass and you'd have to drink it in front of her. Drink a glass, then she would tickle your throat to make sure that you swallow it and you don't spit it out. Drink it, and she'll give you some nuts. She would clean up our stomachs and clean up ourselves every change of season. She would cook as such. We were told as young boys, you don't eat eggs. Young girls, you don't eat eggs. And you don't eat too much peanuts. You don't eat too much this. Why? They were delaying our maturity. Now our young boys and girls, 3 to 5, 6 boiled eggs a week. Their breasts are already bulging out by the time they are 7 years and 8 years old. Our young boys, by the time they're 9, 10 years old, they're already having weight dreams.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
The Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuwani. Onongeshe fa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendi fenawa nukumuna oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
You're now listening to My Sunny Morning Take, the show where we dive into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else in between to help you make sense of how it works around you from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. every Sunday. Want to take a trip through history's major events or explore interesting geographical features and even some interesting scientific developments? Well, join us on My Sunday Morning Take every Sunday morning from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. where we look into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science and everything else to help you understand what is happening in the world.
Oh,
carried away enough to start again.
He finds the cloth, the tree. Daisies look and take a peek. Sun takes colors from the green and bleaches. December white, a cotton dress. Open lawn to make a nest. Try to think what I love best in your features. You cut through skin, a new addition to your grin. To reach the end, we must begin to feel it. Lie and trace you on the cross. Hair that makes a question mark. You'll always be in my heart. I mean it. You were born to run.
Welcoming you on that particular note there from the likes of Ed Sheeran with the song Wildflowers. Before that, you heard the sounds of the Empire of the Sun with the song Way to Go. And welcoming you, you know, officially for this Sunday morning session, which technically leads us into the week of the actual Christmas holidays. If you are traveling, dear listeners, even this particular early morning session here on a Sunday morning, do take care and specifically ensure that you come back safely and you come back alive. Now, as we always do, specifically here on your Sunday morning sessions from 5 to 7, where you'll be in my company, dear listeners, we explore the particular talking points that we don't get to explore during the course of the week, but we also take a particularly interesting look at it in terms of that we've got to look at everything historic, everything geography, everything science, a little bit of science, and a little bit of everything else in between. So on that particular note, dear listeners, starting off in our discussion, it's not to celebrate this particular resource, just to be sure, you know, just to stipulate that particular point right there. But it's more like a conversation based upon where it has evolved towards. Because said particular conversation, dear listeners, and this particular item, yes, it's a thing that we're talking about, not just an event, but an actual thing, was actually, if I can say, conceived on a platform of independently developing sort of like resource nodes. If you don't know what a node is, a node is like a specific point in a specific network of certain particular things. Depending on what the node, you know, what function this particular node does. Now, the internet itself, dear listeners, yes, that's our conversation, is that particular thing that we're talking about this morning. It was developed in the 1960s, obviously with the idea or under the particular auspices of a program that was sanctioned by the U.S. Department of Defense, and it had its own particular sort of like goals because it was spread, the development was spread out between the United States, the United Kingdom, and France. It was a joint program. If you look at things, for example, like infrastructure development programs, that's how you see it today. It was the same particular scenario. It was a joint program between these three leading countries at the time. And, you know, each particular segment of the, their particular program had to develop their own situation, or their own particular infrastructure and, bring it up to a specific speed and to up to a specific state that allowed the rest of the world in the future. I say the world in the future because I'm obviously talking about we are currently using the thing, and it's an interesting particular tool, and it's an interesting particular development that that the internet has actually evolved into. Because just so that you know, dear listeners, don't confuse the two terms of the internet and the World Wide Web for being the same thing. There's a guy. He's a Brit. He developed the World Wide Web on the internet. Just so that you know. Just so that you know these particular distinctions. He's the guy that developed the ability for us to go www. Dot, and then you enter in the rest of the address and you can go from there. The guys that actually developed the network were a whole bunch of university, not graduates, but university, let's call them university centers that worked under a specific program under, you know, various government initiatives across three countries. Now, why do I share this with you? Well, the specific thing is that currently in the world, there's just over 1 billion websites active. We're not talking about applications, we're talking about websites. An application is a doorway to a specific function. Websites are literally hosted elements that you find on this digital platform with the resources that are contained within them. Now, if you've got just above 1 billion websites active in the world, and according to the International Telecommunications Union, the ITU, which is the UN's oldest agency. The ITU estimates that there's approximately approximately 66 billion people. That's about 67.4% of the world's population are currently accessing the internet or using the internet in one or other way in 2025. That's the current statistic. As of 2025. The ITU also notes that this represents an increase from 60% in 2020, with 1.3 billion people estimated to have come online during this period. So since 2020, 1.3 billion people, new people, could access the internet. However, this ultimately means that 2.2 billion people are still offline. It's not bad. It's also not the best statistic to talk about. And obviously the particular indication about this has to do with things like, you know, how do people actually access internet wherever they find themselves and for what particular purposes? It would have been, you know, obviously a nice thing to also show you the particular scenario around the world in terms of where the least density of websites are and the most density of websites are, but we'll keep that particular talking point for another scenario. So there's just over 1.5 billion websites in the world today, and specifically on the World Wide Web. Of these, less than 200 million are active. That shows you just how many websites actually attract a lot of traffic. The milestone of 1 billion websites was first achieved or first reached in September of 2014. And as confirmed by Netcraft in its 2014 web server survey, and the first estimated and announced by the Internet Life Stats, it's another particular sort of like a statistics gathering platform. The number has subsequently declined, reverting back just to below, to a level below the 1 billion mark. And this was due to the monthly fluctuations of the count of inactive websites. So you also need to take that in consideration. The ability to say that, you know, you've got a website in some cases doesn't always mean that the website will always be accessed or used in many cases. But it is a useful particular resource always to have active. For example, like our website, you know, us at Eagle FM. Our website gives you the opportunity, if you're someone that finds yourself somewhere where, you know, you forgot to download the Eagle FM app, then you can just, you know, pop in the website address of Eagle FM and voila, you'll be able to still listen to us wherever you find yourself across the world. And the app does the same thing. If you find yourself obviously in Namibia, it'll just be prudent, you know, to also round that out with being in a specific spot or a specific zone that you could tap into a frequency, radio, conventional communication. Now, the question of the inactive websites obviously makes things a little bit difficult because registrations of a website, yes, you've got to register this website, obviously always is a different indicator versus whether or not the website is actually active. And this obviously speaks towards the level in terms of reverting back to the level below 1 billion. And this is before reaching again and stabilizing above the 1 billion mark, which started or began in March of 2016. Now, during 2016, the total number of sites has grown significantly. Now, from 900 million in January of 2016 to 1.7 billion in December of 2016. From 2016 to 2018, the level has held a pretty much an unchanged level. From one website in 1991 to 1 billion in 2014, this particular indication obviously slow shows you that the total number of websites by year throughout in terms of its particular growth, and you can sometimes see this. Its highest peak was obviously in 2017 with a level of literally 1.76 billion websites being registered, falling down to the 1.63 billion website mark. So it's an aspect obviously of looking at things in terms of seeing, you know, how does this sometimes work? But it's obviously also a particular indication in terms of what functions of the web, of the internet also got developed, because you have situations, for example, where you had like Netflix and the website Yandex that came through in 1997. At that stage, there was 120 million users that were able to access the internet, and they could access 1.1 billion websites at that time. 120 million people had access to 1.1 billion websites at the time. The scenario obviously meant in many cases that, it's not 1.1 billion, it was 1.1 million. the numbers also do their own little tricks. But yeah, so in a point of, for example, in 1997, 120 million people over 1.1 million or having access to 1.1 million. It then slowly grew to 188 when Google got rolled out in 1998, and 188 million people could access 2.4 million websites. When it moved into 1999, PayPal got launched. At that stage, it was 280 million people around the world that could access the internet, and they could access only 3.1 million websites. You had the website service provider Baidu popping up. Then at that stage, 413 million people could access the internet, and they could access 17 million websites. And as you can obviously see, the particular indicators keeps growing and growing by year on year growth. An interesting particular thing, one of the most often used resources in the world, Wikipedia, when it got launched in 2001, At that stage, there was 500 million websites. Not 500 million websites. There were 500 million people that could access the web, the internet, and they could access 29.2 million websites. As things obviously went on, reaching a level specifically like in 2010, you had 2.045 billion people who could access the internet in 2010. Remember, in 2010, we were still on the 6 billion mark, 6 point something billion people around the world mark. Only a third of humans could access the internet in 2010. In 2010, Pinterest and Instagram were launched. Before Instagram was bought out by Meta, to become part of the Meta collection of applications and products, Instagram was launched in 2010. At that stage, the 2.045 billion people around the world that had access to the internet, they could only access 206 million websites. Things grow on, developed obviously. By 2015, or the point of 2015, 3.1 billion people had access to the internet. Obviously, you can see between 2.045 billion and 3.185 billion, there was at least a healthy growth of close to, what, 1.3-something? No, 1.13-something billion humans around the world who actually, in that 5-year period of between 2010 to 2015, that could start accessing the internet. At that stage, in 2015, you had 863 million websites that you could interact with. It then obviously grew from 2015 to 2016 up to the point in 2018 where we've now got the 1.630 billion websites currently active. So, with that particular indication, dear listeners, it had actually shown, you know, as internet access grows, also the ability for new websites to be opened and thus also for people to start accessing things. This has also meant that the internet has grown in its own particular interesting ways, because the first internet you could only access at that stage, it had various limited, if I can call it like, resources. For example, if you tried accessing the thing, you know, it was just pretty basic. It was just looking at a picture or looking at a Word file. You can't download, you can't interact with the thing, and so on. It has obviously meant that various editions of the internet has rolled out, meaning at what level could you interact, at what level could you view things, at what level could you download things and share files over the same particular resource, meaning the internet itself, and what particular further products you could develop. For example, the social media sites that popped up. Things obviously grew, things obviously developed, and things obviously took on a very interesting take. However, dear listeners, in our particular scenario, we'll be taking a short musical break, and we'll be coming back right after that.
Thank you. What kind of truth is invisible? What kind of future does not exist? When things fall apart and the center's not holding, what kind of love is this? Cry, heaven. Right there, someone is echoing the silence. Waiting for another pin to drop. Right now, someone is praying for patience to go on living. Right now, someone is saying, just make it stop. Right now. In lives we've missed, there's a line to be drawn between endless and infinite. What kind of love is this? Cry, heaven. Cry, heaven. Cry.
When she looked me in the eye, said, you fancy a gone fight? Come and meet me outside. She walks like an angel, she's the devil in white. I can only follow when I should run for my life. She's a stone cold killer. She's a
See, I beg and I borrow just to hide from the light. I'm lost in this battle, I'm out of my mind. It was all I could stay for, just to keep me alive. I'm drowning my sorrows, but she's soon out of sight. Story goes, it's written on the wall. I've seen it all before. The hunger when she calls. My heart won't understand why there's bloodstains on her hands. She says, don't go kill her. She says, don't go kill her. She calls. My heart won't understand why there's bloodstains on her hands. She says, don't call killer. She says, don't call killer. She says, don't call killer.
Not obviously advocating for any particular violence, dear listeners, but that was the song there from St. Raymond with the song Killer. And the song just before it that you heard there was from the classical band Tears for Fears with the song Shame. Now, it does bring us up to about, 25 minutes out from 6. We're close to the halfway point or the midway point, but you're still here with me on your number one talk station, specifically here on my Sunday morning take. So where we left off, we shared a little bit of statistics and we shared a little bit of insights in terms of the internet and its particular impacts as well. But there's obviously a different particular discussion that also pops up regarding the internet itself. Now, when you hear of the internet and its particular developments and its particular things that it has done, it falls or it incorporates a lot of particular, let's call it, sub-trends or sub-developments. When I say sub-developments and sub-trends, these are potentially all the particular things that the internet has been used for or what the internet has been, not that it is doing the advocating, but also a particular scenario that people around the world have actually tried to champion, meaning a particular part of it or a particular talking point of it. For example, discussions of access, discussions of activism, censorship, data activism, democracy, digital divides, digital rights, digital public goods, freedoms, freedom of information, internet phenomena, media capture, net neutrality, privacy, right to internet access. Slacktivism is a term, yes. Sociology, usage, vigilantism, virtual community, and virtual volunteering have all been sort of like the sub-development trends that have kicked off or have been developed since the internet became operational or since it actually became accessible to the rest of the world. Let me rather put it that way. Now, when it became accessible, only in the 80s. But in a very limited particular scenario, it was obviously, not as accessible because the consumer technology was not yet accessible at that particular stage. So what are we talking about? So the internet is a global system, obviously, which you would know of, that consists of interconnected computer networks that use the Internet Protocol Suite. The Internet Protocol Suite is sometimes also identified by the TCP/IP indicator or acronym or abbreviations. And this allows these particular computer networks to communicate between the networks and devices. Now, it is a network of networks that comprises of private, public, academic, business, and government networks of local to global scope, linked by electronic, wireless, and sometimes also optical networking technologies. The internet also carries a vast range of information services and resources. The resources I specifically shared with you just at the start of the discussion, just to show you how the population growth has, you know, the trend analysis based upon that particular trend analysis and the development or the introduction of even more websites. Now, since it carries these vast resources and information services, for example, such as interlinked hypertext documents and applications of the World Wide Web, electronic mail, discussion groups, internet telephony, streaming media and file sharing services, the most traditional communication media, including the telephone, radio, television, paper mail, newspapers, and print publishing have been transformed by the internet. All these things have been transformed by the internet. Even us here at Eagle FM, the particular technology that we, technically started from the conventional technology of radio, it has been impacted by the internet as well. Reason being, obviously, is that you cannot deny going digital. You cannot deny specifically developing in a specific pathway, obviously, so as to reach as many audience members as possible. Now, this obviously means that since the internet's particular influence on all these conventional communication mediums, it gave rise or is giving rise to new media, for example, through the use of the email, online music, digital newspapers, news aggregators, and audio and video streaming sites. So the internet has also been enabled or has enabled and still accelerates new forms of personal interaction through instant messaging, internet forums, and social networking services. It has also brought about the advent of online shopping, which has also grown to occupy significant markets across industries, enabled firms to extend brick-and-mortar presences to serve large markets, and it has also led to the development of business-to-business and financial services on the internet that affect supply chains across entire industries. So, you'll be asking the particularly important question of where does this thing come from? So, the origins of the internet date back to research that actually enabled the time-sharing of computer resources. Now, the development of the particular, if I can call it sort of like, it's a technology within the technology, obviously, of telecommunications, but packet switching is a method of grouping data into short messages in a fixed format. Meaning, what actually helped with this internet development that took place when it was developed was that they first had to sort out how do you put bundles of information into packets. So when you look at, if you ever go into a shop, dear listeners, and you go look at how you buy various particular goods, you, in many cases, you can scoop what you need and measure it off, but you put it still in a packet, which is a package, which is a container, or you already buy it in a container or in a package. You already buy it in it, meaning it's already been packed for you. So, at the heart of this particular discussion, when the internet was being developed, was a way of packaging or placing in packets of a standard size, various components of information, which information are data or pieces of data packaged in this packet. This obviously also meant that the design of computer networks for data communication also needed to be developed. Now, the set of communication protocols that is needed to enable internet working on the internet arose from research and development that was commissioned in the 1970s by the U.S. Department of Defense's own particular agency known as DARPA, D-A-R-P-A, which stands for the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, in collaboration with universities and researchers across the US and the UK and France. Now, I'm going to put a little bit of a bookmarker in there, dear listeners. The bookmarker is based upon literally that sentence that I just mentioned to you in terms of what happens if, you know, when you look at triple B, or joint ventures or, procurement and the likes, you can clearly see that this was research and development that was procured, meaning a budget was placed, was submitted, or was afforded or extended, and these particular entities, academic entities, they can take on various formats. They could be independent researchers, or they could be literally university departments. But they could access this funding specifically to develop these particular products and services for the funder. For the funder. Now, specifically, this speaks to the particular development that that I witnessed last year in 2024 when the research and development report was launched by the NCRST, or not launched, but brought out, actually, because it helped to actually provide insight into to what extent do we research certain particular aspects of the Namibian space. In many cases, there was a lot of emphasis placed on the STEM fields, but not too much on the humanities fields. So this meant that we were lagging behind in terms of understanding the various particular developments happening in the social spheres of the country. We obviously need more psychologists to try and study the particular Namibian psychological sphere in the country. We need more research specifically if you can talk about the other humanities departments like law. We need more historians, our own historians, and we need more particular, researchers that speak towards various particular things that exist in Namibia outside of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics fields. We need more of those researchers. The downside has been, dear listeners, that at the heart of everything, there's also very few data. Now, for the past year, I've emphasized specifically in the discussions here on Eagle FM that data is essential. You cannot do anything with data if an agency, if a ministry, or if there is no broad-based data collection taking place in the country. When you look at these particular points, you can only research when you've got data. And in many cases, it is very expensive, dear listeners, as an independent, private researcher, if you try to go and conduct research. In many cases, you need financing. You need funding to go and start something. If you don't have access to the funding, you can't start the thing. Even if you can start the thing, meaning you might have the instruments, you might have the tools, you might have the team. In many cases, it's a question of, is the financing there to finance this particular research point? I'll mention another particular example to you as well. The brother that follows after me, because, we're a bunch of siblings, when he did his particular honors program, his final project was a group project, so they were in a group. And since they were a bunch of psychology students, they had to go to the informal settlements here in Windhoek, specifically to research the particular point that they, or the aspect that they were researching for their project. They needed to go to these particular areas of Windhoek, the informal settlements. Now, at the heart of this, every time when they had to do their group work or go and have a group field excursion, the biggest thing that my brother kept mentioning, and you always have to listen, this is where active listening comes in for any particular person, listening right now, is that you try to listen in terms of seeing, okay, so what are the key talking points and the the nuggets of facts and information that you're going to share. At the heart of every particular thing, when I always listened to him, when, you know, he was sort of like venting his frustrations in terms of what they could actually do with no money that they could access, you know, they had to do field work by not having any financing because they're students, they're fourth year students. They have to do this all out of their own pockets. And for them to reach to achieve the particular results, they also needed to, you know, access financing from their own families. Now, this obviously made things weird because you might be sitting there going like, what? And this is ultimately some of the particular pressures that research students, specifically if they get into like their fourth year for their honors degrees, which is an advanced degree, it's a postgraduate degree, you know, makes things complicated because in many cases you are financing things out of your own pocket as a researcher because you're researching, you're a student, you've now gone past the basic, what do they call it, basic tertiary education level, which is that 3-year program or that one year diploma or certification after your grade 12. For us that have grade 12, I'm sorry guys, for you guys that are part of the new education system, you know, you're part of a new system that still does not make any sense to us because, I mean us, when I say us, anyone that has matriculated before 2015, we know that you need 12 years of education to get to a particular point, and how we understood A-levels to work in terms of the conventional thinking out there was that A-levels was an extra year, a 13th year that was applied. And, you know, this particular system that you guys find yourselves part in, if you're now 18, 16, 17, 15 and 14 listening right now, it doesn't make very much sense. But you know what? It's your system that you've got to deal with. So, at the heart of that particular discussion that I shared with you that, you know, that my younger brother experienced in his particular honors program was a discussion of, you know, how do you try to do the research that you need? You try to elevate the particular research that has to be done in your country and that shapes the particular information sets that is required for you. A bonus in terms of what was interesting. After they had completed their project, submitted the report, obviously graduated with, by achieving the final hurdle, was a very interesting bonus in terms of where he was contacted. Because as a researcher, you need to put down who you are in your report and potentially some contact details where necessary. And they were contacted, you know, from universities, from Germany and from Europe, in terms of to request whether or not they can make use of the report's findings in further research in other parts of the world. So that actually was a bonus because it speaks towards the ability of you generating your own information, your own data, your own analysis, your own findings about your own space and your own world for you, for that to be captured. And thus you develop from that particular point and then you start seeing that there's further interest coming through from other spheres around the world. And how it was discovered, dear listeners, it wasn't because a European flew here and saw the report somewhere. No. Those people used the internet. The very resource that I highlighted to you is transforming the way we actually communicate, the way we actually share information, and the way we actually, you know, project and store and preserve this particular information. Now, getting back to where I left the bookmarker obviously in terms of the research that was done in the US, the UK and France under this particular program by the DARPA agency of the United States was that it was there to develop its own particular insights and connect information nodes. So, when you've got to look at the word internet. It's not the first time that it popped up here in the 20th century. It didn't miraculously pop up in the 60s or the 70s when, you know, it actually, no. The word internet was firstly used, or its first instances, or its first recorded usage was in 1849. And it meant, at that stage, interconnected or interwoven. Now, the words interconnected and interwoven still exist. Interneted was obviously just a shortened version of interconnected and interwoven. But now interconnected and interwoven are completely separate from internet or interneted. So the word internet was then used in 1945 by the US War Department in a radio operator's manual. And in 1974, it was used as a shorthand form for internet work. Today, the term internet most commonly refers to the global system of these interconnected computer networks, and though it may also refer to any group of smaller networks. Obviously, for those IT guys who know their particular network abbreviations, you get a wide area network. The most commonly used network scenarios are wide area networks and local area networks. For those of us that obviously participated in these various instances of networking, meaning computers that were connected in networks. You know, I had the privilege of sometimes seeing how the IT students, when I was a student myself, full-time student myself, would create a small network just to play a video game between themselves. And that was one of the nice things that obviously happened. You didn't need these newer developments in video gaming where you need the internet to play games. Back then was a bunch of like-minded individuals. They all had their own particular computers. And what they did, you just needed one guy that had a network switch. They call it a network switch. It's like a big gray situation thing with multiple ports on both sides. You show up with your computer at my place. The other guy shows up with his computer also at my place. We're like three buddies. We plug into that network switch. You can still buy them, I think, at various internet service providers or, you know, hardware stores. And you create a local area network. Lovely stuff. And guys would just be playing with each other the whole time. Obviously, the video game technology has advanced from there, because now it meant you... Oh, let me explain it this way. The video game companies have now developed servers, or they now use data centers to connect millions of players around the world to participate in the same particular game at certain particular times. Obviously, the game that currently is still, you know, the storm, if I say storm, but rather in a scenario of still the, you know, the talk of the town, a game by the name of Marvel's Rivals, obviously, you know, has taken on the mantle of being the latest offering that Overwatch from Blizzard and Activision had. Marvel's Rivals is produced and operated by the Chinese game company NetEase under the licensing, obviously, of Marvel, which is a Disney product. It's now a Disney product. But, you know, it has literally highlighted how, various gamers around the world would love to play online, stay connected to the internet, play against millions of other people around the world, participate in, having an experience that like no other. And it sometimes is an experience like no other. I mean, I've played so many internet games myself. Yes, it's way better than drinking. It's way better than actually, you know, partying outside and potentially walking into a traffic officer when you don't want to be walking into a traffic officer, especially if you're someone that has a driver's license like myself. So yeah, it's way better than staying at that, going out, because you're staying at home and you're just enjoying your particular peace. Now, when we got to look obviously at the particular developments that also built up in a governance format around the internet itself, was as things were developing, guys, in terms of now the internet being sort of like rolled out in the 80s, specifically at here towards the end of the 80s, in 1988, 1989, because obviously that Englishman, that Brit that I told you about at the start of the show, who developed the World Wide Web, which runs on the internet, just so that you know, they're not the same thing. The one is built on the other, or the one was made for the other. Think of it that way. It's not cement and bricks being the same thing. Just so that I explain that to you. Sometimes you need the cement to make the bricks, but you also need the bricks to be, you know, held in place by the same cement. Ne? Just that you understand. Even though the bricks are made from the same thing. So, with that particular indication, dear listeners, in the governance sphere of things, the internet has no single centralized governance in either technological implementation or in policies for access and usage. Why? Because each constituent network sets its own particular policies. Now, the overarching definitions of the two principal namespaces on the internet, which is the Internet Protocol Address, IP address, space, and the domain name system, DNS, are directed by maintainer organization. This maintainer organization is known as the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. Now, this particular technical underpinning and standardization of the core protocols is an activity of the non-profit organization by the name of the Internet Engineering Task Force. And the EITF specifically, it's known as a standards organization for the internet, and it is responsible for the technical standards that make up the internet protocol suite. It has no formal membership roster, and its requirements to join and all its participants, are also volunteers. Because when you got to look at all these particular organizations in terms of a governance discussion, remember I started with the ITU at the start of the discussion. The ITU is a UN agency, but also associated where internet would sometimes also fall under would be under UNESCO, which is another internet, which is another UN agency as well. But when you come to the actual governance structures, meaning organizations that are not within the UN umbrella of organizations, but they are somewhat independent because they're not owned by any particular government out there, but they actually are only based in the markets or in this the spheres of markets where they were brought to life. You've got the Internet Governance Forum, which is something I follow myself. This is a multi-stakeholder governance group for policy dialogue on issues of internet governance. You get the Regional Internet Registry Organization, the RIR. This is an organization that manages the allocation and registration of internet number resources within a region of the world. This particular governance entity includes the IP addresses that you would need for your website, and the autonomous system numbers that would also be needed for your website when you construct a website and you need to put it on the internet. You also get the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority, IANA, which is a standards organization that oversees global IP address allocation, autonomous system number allocation, and root zone management for the domain name system requirements. And obviously this particular agency itself, as mentioned, also global. It's not a UN agency, not like the ITU and UNESCO. You get to ICANN that I mentioned a little bit earlier, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, also a multi-stakeholder group, and non-profit organization that's headquartered also in the US. You get the IETF that I just mentioned, the Internet Engineering Task Force. And finally, the one particular advocacy group. It's an American group, an American advocacy group. It's a non-for-profit organization, the Internet Society. There is a branch in Namibia. They work very closely with the Ministry of Information Communication Technology, the Ministry of MICT. The Internet Society, obviously, I also follow them because they also have interesting developments specifically happening. There's a whole bunch of discussions, talks, presentations that happen year round, outside of the particular scope of the UN itself. Yes, of the UN itself. And you guys would not believe me when I tell you how underrepresented we as Africans are. You guys would not believe it, how underrepresented we are. At best, and I've seen this reality and this truth specifically because I've heard from someone else, the only people that actually, or the only African countries that actively participate in these internet development discussions, multi-stakeholder platforms around the world at these particular organizations on internet governance that I mentioned are predominantly the South Africans, the Nigerians, the Kenyans, and then it ends there. It ends there, dear listeners. If you're going to ask me, yeah, so, you know, what's the particular sort of like call to action scenario, Dwight, that you're trying to suggest? The suggestion is pretty clear on the wall. It's pretty clear on the wall. I mean, currently right now, there's an interesting conversation obviously popping up in Namibia. For those of you that are participating in this conversation, has been the conversation of whether or not Elon Musk's Starlink should be made available in Namibia. I asked, just here in the studio, I asked a colleague back in last week, you know, what's the cheapest package that you can buy from Starlink? Now, this is on an accessibility discussion and on an affordability discussion. What's the cheapest that you can pay? $1,600 Namibian. For the cheapest package, $1,600. And guess what? One of Namibia's service providers already provides satellite internet services or internet coverage by satellite. What's so special about bringing Starlink to Namibia? The other particular downside has been the discussion, obviously, of, you know, what this potentially would mean. But obviously much of the reasons being given that I've seen, and this was on a WhatsApp group specifically by someone advocating for the particular support of Elon Musk. Elon Musk doesn't need our support, guys. In actual fact, we need to develop our own particular services, or protect already the few service providers that we've got, in this particular space. Elon Musk doesn't need Namibia's money. It doesn't. I still don't understand why. There's such a big, fanfare being made of Starlink, because you need to go and install yourself. They don't come and install it for you. You have to go, it literally is a little dish. Yeah, it's a little dish, little satellite dish that you've got to go and install on your property. Now, if you're someone that rents, obviously your landlord will tell you you're not damaging their property by installing that little thing, because you need to install it on the highest point and in a certain direction. Whereas much of the internet services that we've already got is just plugging and play. Voila, there you go, my guy. Plugging and play services. You're up and running. Who has time to now go and install dishes by themselves against, you know, just to find the best coverage because the satellite is not aligned, or your satellite dish is not aligned to the satellite in the sky? What kind of rubbish is that? Literally, what kind of over-the-top PT physical training is that just to get access to a product and a service? A product and a service, dear listeners, remember this piece of advice, should not make you jump over hoops, run through valleys, and try to find the next particular, or what you call it, next best thing, or actually just give you a lot of work. They shouldn't give you a lot of work just to access the product. A product and a service should not make it difficult for you. It shouldn't be PT. It should be plug and play. Unbox and use. Open up and eat. That's it. Break the seal and drink. That's it. Straightforward, accessible, pay the price, you get access to the product. Not pay the price, and you're struggling with installation. Well, we'll quickly be taking a short musical break, dear listeners, and after the musical break, we'll be coming back, heading into the second half. Actually, we're already in the second half of this morning's program, but you're here on your number one talk radio station. This is my Sunday morning take, and let's see each other right after this musical break.
Thank you. don't have much luck these days with far too much time. Lost a lot of my rhythm in this bubble of mine. I would sure like to help you. I will give you my word. Then I'll fly away, brother. Float away like a bird. You don't get much dignity. You don't get much sense of pride. When your mind gets too narrow and your nose gets too wide. I breathe and I'm trying in my cauldron tonight. Know a part of me's dying. There's a part come online. 'Cause I had a dream last night that you were beside me. Two kids in the garden and your love behind. Know today may taste bitter, maybe tomorrow is gone. Lord, I wanna get happy before I get old. So I took out some paper and I dug out a pen. Poured myself out some water and I rinsed out the gin. I spoke of my dream that night in the greatest detail. Of my beautiful children and my sweet Abigail. But before she can find me, before I can let her in, before no sweet happy end, let the battle begin. Let the trumpets blow Valhalla, let the soldier arrive. Lord, let Abigail catch me when I fall from the skies. 'Cause I had a dream last night that you were beside. Two kids in the garden and all this behind. No, today may taste bitter, maybe tomorrow is gone. Lord, I want to get high before I get old. Lord, I want to get high before I get old. Lord, I want to get happy before I get.
Coming back there specifically from the sounds of Paolo Nutini with the song Abigail. Don't ask me who Abigail is, guys. I don't know who that is. Besides our Abigail that we obviously have here at Eagle FM. That's, you know, that's my regular colleague itself. But where we actually left off in our particular discussion for this morning, dear listeners, has been one obviously where it brings us into the particular scope of the early formations of this thing that we call the internet. Now, the early formations, you know the gist. It was a particular U.S. Department of Defense project that incorporated American, British, and French universities and researchers. But in the 1960s, computer scientists began developing systems for time-sharing of computer resources. A gentleman by the name of J.C. R. Licklider. Yes, that's the man's name. Joseph Carl Robnett Licklider was his name. Was an American psychologist and computer scientist who is considered to be among the most prominent figures in computer science development and general computing. Now, he proposed the idea of a universal network while working at a company by the name of Bolt, Beranek, and Newman. Bolt, Beranek, and Newman, was now currently known as RTX BBN Technologies, which is an American research and development company based in the US. And later on, he went on to lead the information processing techniques office, the IPTO, which is also known originally as the command and control research, platform, part of the US Department of Defense. And at that particular scenario, he also had the opportunity of leading this in, the US Department of Defense in terms of, you know, trying to bring in new ideas and developing new programs. Now, his research into packet switching, one of the fundamental internet technologies, started in the work of another researcher by the name of Paul Baran, and as was also in the early 60s, he's the other inventor of the particular, you know, packet switching. They call it packet switching, the meaning this is the ability for one computer to, of another, and another computer to be able to talk to each other. So it's the basic language platform, the basic technology that is first developed to allow two computers to talk to each other. Because technically, if you don't understand how your computer is connected or how your smartphone is connected to the internet, it is primarily the ability of your smartphone and the internet, whichever part of the internet you're accessing, to packet switch with each other. If you don't know, it's sending data to each other. It's the data that you also buy, technically, fundamentally. Now, this then obviously led to the various particular developments that obviously happened. There was a third researcher that was also part of this network development situation, known as Donald Davis. Donald Davis was a British computer scientist, and he worked for the UK's National Physical Laboratory in 1965. Now, after a symposium on operating systems principles, yes, they had a symposium on such things, in 1967, packet switching from the proposed, an NPL network is a particular network standard, was incorporated into the design of ARPANET, which was an experimental resource sharing network that was proposed by ARPA. This program where, Lidlicker or Licklider was working. I have to make sure I don't say anything, you know, not so nice when pronouncing that guy's name. So, with obviously Licklider being at ARPA already, which is the Advanced Research Projects Agency of the U.S. Defense Department of Defense, you start seeing the first indications of a network properly speaking to its various components, starting to take function. Now, ARPANET or ARPANET development began with two network nodes, which were interconnected between the University of California in Los Angeles and Stanford Research Institute on 29 October 1969. So the first internet dear listeners began on 29 October 1969. That's where you need to start from, 1969. The third site was at the University of California, Santa Barbara, followed by the University of Utah. So how did this situation work? In essence, the idea of the development of this program, because I tried finding the further motivational documentation on why this program was developed, was technically so that in the event of a massive, if we can call it like a catastrophic event around the world happened, all trace of human innovations, information, history, and all that doesn't just get wiped away with this catastrophic event. It is stored somewhere else, and it can be accessed. Now, this obviously shows you the foresight, the forward-thinking ability of us as humanity, or us as humans, and specifically in certain parts of the world, to think ahead in terms of saying, hey, you know what? In the event of something bad happens, let's develop these nodes of information that helps to preserve who we are as humans. And yes, unfortunately, it began in the United States, because at that stage, not the U.S. of today, the U.S. of then, they had an altruistic perspective on, you know, trying to have a world that is a better place for all humans. And we don't have these weird things of coup d'etats and coups and authoritarian governments and regimes popping up left, right, and center and doing funny things. No. It was a situation of, you know what, let's develop the best platforms for humanity to actually, you know, develop the next level of living from. Be that as it may, obviously, things have greatly advanced in that aspect. Being that when it flowed into the 1970s, specifically into 1971, and by the end of that specific year, 15 sites were connected to this young ARPANET. After this, the ARPANET gradually developed into a decentralized communications network, connecting remote centers and military bases in the U.S. Other user networks and research networks, such as the Merit Network and the Cyclades, whichever pronunciation you wish to go for, which is a French research network that was created in the 1970s. The Merit Network, obviously, I think this was the British one. No, this was also an American one. They were both developed in the 1960s and 70s. The early international collaborations for ARPANET were rare, meaning connections were made in 1973 to Norway for the NORSAR and the NDRE, which is the Norwegian Defense Research Establishment. And then you also had Peter Kirstein's research group at the University College London. Peter Kirstein himself was a British computer scientist who played a role also in the creation of the internet. And all of this provided for a gateway, ultimately, for various countries also to start participating in, you know, developing a network. And this, for example, like the British node, was a gateway for British academic networks and also for the establishment of the first internet work or internet work to start kicking off. And this is specifically for the goal of resource sharing. So, when you look at what I just outlined to you specifically, is that you can see all these governments talking to each other just to connect to each other. Just to connect to each other. At the heart of this, obviously, as you can see, resource sharing and the ability to develop further information resources are key. I'll say this even today. It's a very bold statement based upon fact. One of the internet's biggest and best developments in the past 20 years of me having access to the internet has been a resource like YouTube specifically. It has been a profound resource. Guys, you can find all kinds of manner of information that can help you with any particular subject matter on any particular, in any particular point of history at any particular time. However, before we continue, we'll take a short break and come back right after this.
The festive season is a time for traveling, a time to reunite and celebrate with loved ones. But most importantly, it's a time to obey the road rules. Check your tires, wear your seatbelt, drive sober, adhere to speed limits, and walk responsibly. Do the right thing and save lives this festive season. Your family awaits.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
You're now listening to My Sunday Morning Tech, the show where we dive into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else in between to help you make sense of how it works around you from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. every Sunday. So we come back, dear listeners. We've got the last leg to go, specifically here on your number one talk radio station. This is My Sunday Morning Tech. If you've just woken up, good morning, good morning, good morning. Ultimately, I do hope that you've got a lovely cup of joe in your hands. A cup of joe is a cup of Java. If you don't know what Java is, it's basically coffee. It's not the internet or computer programming language, which it also is, but I mean, it's technically like a misrepresentation of what that thing actually does, because it doesn't actually give you a kickstart to the day. It technically just helps your program to talk to other programs. So when you obviously look at the resources that you can find in 2025 and the extent to which these resources actually mean something of worth or something of note to you as a user out there, guys, I'm not joking when I say a resource like YouTube, a resource, for example, like Wikipedia, like all the other particular information sites, and that other resource that I discovered late in the middle of last year. Yo. Guys, I shared it once with Helmut. I shared it with my sister, because my sister is also, she's an avid reader and an avid academic herself, academic in her own rights, meaning because she always reads research papers and the likes, like what I also do. And it's a resource under so many particular, so many particular fields. Yeah, fields specifically. You can find research papers, textbooks. I won't mention the resource's name because I'm keeping it close to, you know, it's my resource. I found it. I stumbled upon the thing while I was stumbling trying to find something else. So, this particular resource in its own right, if I position it right next to YouTube, if I position it right next to a resource like Wikipedia, they are priceless. Now, if you're out there, guys, and, one of the interesting things that I also read about when I read up about Wikipedia itself, for that matter. And remember, all of these things are built on the internet. This, what I'm explaining to you, are all the positives of the internet. Yes, the internet is a great amount of negatives that exist. But the positives that I'm showing to you are positives that speak to me personally, specifically in terms of the intellectual capacity that I can, you know, leverage, the intellectual stimulation that I sometimes need at the touch of a finger, the touch of a button, at, you know, a quick access point in terms of, you know, trying to see whether or not someone is actually speaking a bold-faced lie, or they are on track in terms of at least sharing the bare minimum facts about a subject matter, things like that. As opposed to, obviously, when in my first formative years of university life, where there were a whole bunch of guys, because we didn't have smartphones, there were so many guys that were just making statements and saying things. They were, in many cases, was borderline libel or borderline malicious commentary that they were citing. And as you guys know, how things operated back in the 2000s, I'm talking about the first half of the 2000s. You know, people speaking with their fists were a common thing, you know, and disagreements were pretty violent and pretty emotional at some cases. But today, since you've got access to information, conversations can move and progress a lot quicker. Conversations can be held based upon facts. Corrections can be done almost immediately, and people can actually get to the point of saying, hey, you know what? We don't need to start a whole, you know, brawl based upon someone's misunderstanding upon a certain point. That person can be corrected within seconds. They can be corrected. You just show them the facts. You just show them the information sets. So when I cite that in terms of what these guys developed back in the 70s and the 60s, this has only led to positives. I can only think of positives. Yeah, they're Americans. Yes, they're French. Yes, they're British. Yes, they're Norwegians. But I mean, if it's there for us, for the rest of the world, it has been a positive. It has been a boon. It has been the particular, what do they call that? The blessing that, you know, many religious people love. They love using that term, you know, to be blessed or seeking a blesser. we'll stay, we'll keep that particular, you know, colloquial understanding to one side. But in much regard, we should actually be grateful that the United States Defense Department developed a resource for the world that the world is currently using today. Free of charge. Okay. It's not free of charge because we've got internet service provision companies. They are obviously charging. But these guys developed it with no clear scope of monetization. And here's the funny thing, guys. There was a particular time, since one of my siblings literally worked in the internet or in the ICT sector at a specific time in her career, there was a time the internet was completely open. Completely open. And that's from 1991 up until I think like 2005. The biggest issue we currently have, and I'm not advocating, nor am I, what do they call that thing? Being an activist on this talking point. The current issue right now has been the cordoning off of the internet that was meant to be open to all, but now technically being like these digital domains of influence, which are the social media websites and the social media platforms. Now we've got that particular issue. Why I'm calling it an issue? Some of the social media platforms are obviously they have very beneficial scenarios. Others are major headaches of misinformation. For those of you that don't know, go and read up about some of the things that many particular commentators on social media websites say specifically about the platform known as X. There's a rampant AI usage happening there. There's rampant misinformation being deployed there. If you're on some of the other particular social media platforms, like YouTube, there's also rampant, AI, misinformation tools being deployed there. If you go onto the old school Facebook and the old school and Instagram, you know, things look a little bit more polished. You can still see, or, you know, you're still dealing with real people there. Some informative scenarios. However, the unfortunate thing about Instagram is it currently has the ugliest, label as we speak, being that it is the most uninstalled application in the world. So it makes things a little bit awkward when you're looking at that one particular Meta application, that being Instagram, is that Instagram faces a fatigue factor. Obviously, TikTok outpaces it in many cases. You've obviously, WhatsApp is obviously like the number one messaging platform in many cases, even though there's the Russian developed Telegram, which I have big issues with because my account almost got hacked. And you can sometimes see how they hack other accounts in your phone book. Yeah, in your contact book. So there's a whole bunch of negative things that were supposed to be, avoided, that spring from positive things and positive developments on the internet. And but this has just been, this was obviously just going to be a natural progression factor that would have taken place. Now, another particular development that popped up also later on was that part of the ARPA projects, the International Network Working Group, and commercial initiatives led to the development of various protocols and standards by which multiple separate networks would become a single network, or a network of networks. So by 1974, Vint Cerf at Stanford University and Bob Kahn at DARPA published a proposal for a protocol for packet network intercommunication. Cerf and his graduate students used the term internet as a shorthand for internetwork in this particular document known as the Request for Comments, which is a publication in a series from the Principal Technical Development and Standard Setting Bodies for the Internet.
It was published in the RFC 675. And so the internet experiment notes, and later on the RFCs started repeating this particular use of the word network, internet, and the work of Louis Poussin, who was the French computer scientist and internet pioneer, and another gentleman by the name of Robert Metcalfe, had important influences on the resulting, you know, internet protocol and TCP design that obviously started taking form. You then had obviously national particular telecoms and postal and telephone service providers and commercial providers developing a standard known as the X25 standard, which is an ITU standard protocol suite for data communication, a packet switched data communication. So it became later on an ITU recognized standard, and it was later on deployed into public data networks. Things developed obviously into the 1980s, and this is obviously as ARPANET initially served as the backbone for the interconnection of these regional academic and military networks in the US to enable resource sharing. By 1982, the Internet Protocol Suite was standardized, which facilitated worldwide proliferation of interconnected networks. The TCP/IP network access expanded again in 1986 with the National Science Foundation Network, which provided access to supercomputer sites in the US for researchers, first at speeds of 56 kilobits per second and later on to 1.5 megabits per second and then to 45 megabits per second. The NSFNet expanded into academic and research organizations in Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and Japan in 1988 to 1989. Although other network protocols such as the UUCP, UUCP is a program, is a suite of computer programs and protocols which allow remote execution of commands and transfer of files, emails, and net news, between computers. And another particular protocol known as the PTT public data networks had global reach well before this time. Now this obviously marked the beginning of the internet as an intercontinental network. And commercial internet service providers started emerging in 1989 in the US and in Australia. And so, ARPANET, the whole foundation upon which the internet had been born on, was decommissioned in 1990. This then obviously led to the commercialization of the internet, meaning the linking of commercial networks and enterprises by the early 1990s, as well as the advent of the World Wide Web, marked the beginning of the transition to the modern internet. Steady advances in semiconductor technology, you know, those chips that we use and see in our smartphones, in all other electric components and parts and products, started becoming a thing. And optical networking created new economic opportunities for commercial involvement in the expansion of the network in its core and for delivering services to the public. So you obviously see these particular developments spring up as things are obviously happening. And you also saw the notion of internet coverage popping up as well, because measuring the worldwide internet users and the internet coverage discussion has been a key thing, because they get broken up into three particular scenarios. You get worldwide coverage, and then you get coverage in developing countries and coverage in developed countries. So in 2005, we had 6.5 billion people. At that stage, globally, internet users were at least at 16%. In the developing world, it was at 8%, and in the developed world, it was at 51%. We had 6.5 million people in 2005. In 2010, we had 6.9 billion people. Across the world, 30% of that 6.9 billion had access to the internet. In developing countries, that meant 21%. So it was a stark difference between the 8% 5 years ago in 2005 versus the 21% in 2010. In developed countries, it had jumped from 51% in 2005 to 61% internet access or coverage in developed countries. By 2017, 7 years after that, the world population stood at 7.4 billion people. Worldwide, 48% of humanity had access to the internet. In developing countries, it translated to 41.3%. In developed countries, it was 81% of people. In 2023, we stood on 8 billion people across the world. Globally, 67% of them had access to the internet. In developing countries, it had grown by a stark 19%, 19 or 18.7% from 2017 to the 60% in 2023. And in developed countries, it had jumped from the 81% in 2017 to 93% in 2023. A stark difference in terms of what internet access has created. Obviously, it also cites that there's a lot of people with various particular devices that can access the internet from anywhere. It also speaks to great things specifically in terms of social uses and users and the particular scenarios in terms of what people use the internet for. There's also indications of internet users by language, website content also by language. A great part is commanded by English, Chinese, and a compilation of other languages across the world. Obviously, you get a whole bunch of language, internet users by language that come from Korea, Russia, France, or French-speaking territories, Arabic-speaking territories, German-speaking territories, Portuguese-speaking territories, Japanese-speaking territories, and Spanish-speaking territories. And when you've got to look at website content by languages, there's 55% of websites on the internet are, you know, use English as the basic communication medium. 2% use Portuguese, 3% use Arabic, 4% use Japanese, 4% use French, 4% use Chinese, 5% use Spanish, 5% use German, and 6% use Russian. So it's been a boom. It's been a big positive. And it obviously speaks to a lot more things to happen. I'm always fascinated, specifically in my own capacity as, you know, as a communication journalist, specifically in the broadcasting sphere of things, in terms of how broadcasting and communication technologies actually, you know, grow and develop even further. There are obviously big developments and problematic areas still to be phased out. I mean, back in last year in 2024, before our Minister of Education became Minister of Education, she was obviously still the Executive Director of the same ministry. She and a handful of ministerial officials, they participated at the ITU's particular, what was that event's name? But it was one based upon how internet can be deployed for enhancing education. I say enhancing education, not access to education, enhancing education. So that means if the child is already in the facility, meaning the school, the usage of the internet and affiliate technologies to enhance the child's ability to, you know, to become a more skilled Namibian in future. Because the whole reason as to why an education system exists is to develop a skilled workforce. Now, on that note, dear listeners, we'll be taking a short musical break, and after the musical break, it would bring us up to the top of the hour at 7 a.m., which will also translate into our discussion here on Eagle FM, specifically for the Sunday morning session of My Sunday Morning Take coming to an end. On that note, we'll come back right after this short break.
Oh. I'm always wondering what it would be like to die. She asks me why. I always smile when I feel like I'm gonna cry. She asks me why. Over the cliff in Phantom Sands, she's always offering me her hand. And I hear her coming through the echoes, through the echoes, through the echoes, straight to me. Over and over, over and over, over and over. She's always wondering what it would feel like to fly. I ask her why. She says everything that she sees shines in the sky. Up there shining. When your belly's wrong, you're down the phone. When you ask for bread, you get a stone. When you feel like you're alone, listen for me come through the echo.
Thank you. Thank you.
Coming back there from the sound specifically of the Arctic Monkeys with the song Knee Socks. Before that, it was, once again, the group by the name of the Empire of the Sun with To Her Door. And before that, it was Paolo Nutini with Through the Echoes. Bringing us up to the top of the hour at 7 a.m. here on your number one talk radio station, this being Eagle FM. It's a good morning to you if you've just woken up. I do at least hope that you've stretched out, you know, did some lovely stretching exercises. I keep seeing these particular, you know, things pop up on my, you know, my YouTube feed specifically of stretching exercises at certain age groups and specifically, you know, how to stay active. Well, not to stay active per se, but rather just ensure that you're as flexible as always. Not as flexible as you obviously were when you were 15 or 5. No. Obviously, going with the age in terms of the amount of allowable work that your body can go through, ensuring that you're still flexible and as elastic as possible to ensure that you can, you know, operate during the course of the day in terms of whatever the day obviously serves up to you. But on that particular note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end of this morning's session of a Sunday morning take. Obviously, it also cites in terms of the history, the historical development of the internet itself and the various role players and the actual goals and the, you know, the objectives that the internet was developed for and from what it actually started from. And it only speaks towards greater growth being observed. On that particular note, dear listeners, you can catch me during the course of this coming week in terms of where we'll have interesting programming lined up for you. In terms of engagements, in terms of your holiday programming, but nonetheless, for the rest of the Sunday, stay tuned for the rest of your programming to follow on after the musical break.